Hey everybody, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Alex.
And this is Midwave Global News, Midwave Radio Channel's premier current events / global affairs / global music show.
Facts.
This is our first show. Today is, when this is heard, today will be Thursday, February 18th, 2021.
And we're really 3
p.m. on the dot. And we're really excited to get this started. So, to give everybody just kind of a gist of what we're going for, our plan is to talk about, you know, politics and current events with a particular focus on foreign affairs, but obviously talking about domestic politics when we think it's very applicable. And our general format is going to be a shorter section with kind of blurbs about the week, followed by a longer section where we delve into a particular topic. Generally something that you might not hear from other, you know, current events channels. And followed by a third shorter section where it's just kind of something fun. We'll quiz each other, you know, we'll talk about goofy stories from Chicago or just from the world. And then after that, for the remainder of the hour, whenever that ends, probably be about 30 to 35 minutes, we're just going to be playing music. And from that period of time, you can send us recommendations. You can use our contact information that we have on the Midwave site. Make sure to go check that out. And yeah, do you think I'm leaving anything out, Alex?
No, it was all good. Basically, we like to stay informed, Thomas and I, and our goal with this show is to inform you all, the viewers, and convey what we think y'all need to know given current state of affairs in the world, and we're excited to bring it to you. And we're excited to do it with some snazzy music and with our amazing friendship that, you know, it's going to make it a real fun time. So strap in, buckle up, and get ready for this ride.
Well, before we do that, I think we should probably introduce ourselves, correct?
Sure, we can do that. Well, I am Alex. I'm a third year at the University of Chicago. Majoring in environmental science, minoring in French. And I know Thomas because we were suite mates freshman year in Max Pilevsky Central Commons. Great dorm, great place. And
the people's dorm.
The people's dorm, that is a fact. And, you know, our friendship has blossomed since then. And here we are 2 years later running a radio show. What about you, Thomas?
Not me.
Who would have thought?
Hi, I'm Thomas. I am also a third year in the college. I am majoring in political science and then minoring in GIS. And I, you know, I've always, you know, since my first Model UN meeting, my freshman year of high school, I've always loved current affairs and global affairs, specifically in terms of China and the Asian Pacific. So all in all, we're just really excited to get started. So without further ado, I think we're going to start getting into our first segment.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. Welcome back, folks. So today we're going to kick it off with some with an inside scoop in Myanmar.
Gave you this inside scoop. All right, just go.
We're going to talk about the coup that happened on Monday, February 1st in Myanmar, a country in Southeast Asia. So the people have taken to the streets across the country and to protest against a coup that the armed forces of Myanmar committed two Mondays ago. And so the police have responded with water cannons, rubber bullets, live ammunition. So it's a real hullabaloo down there in Myanmar. So let's take you through a little bit about what's going on. So we're getting this from the BBC World News. And so what happened was there was an election, and the a very popular leader down there, Aung San Suu Kyi, who I'm probably butchering the name, was reelected. But quickly after that, the military took over. She was detained along with members of her party. And the military is in charge and declared a year-long state of emergency. And so this was following the general election that the that Ms. Suu Kyi's party won by a landslide. So overwhelmingly, the people supported the the government that was in charge before the coup. And so people are taking to the streets, and I guess we're going to have to see what happens. Back to you, Thomas, for the next story.
Well, first I'll comment on the Myanmar situation. You know, it's obviously very surprising. There's been some issues with civil-military relations there in the past. You know, Aung San Suu Kyi actually won a Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know exactly what year, but I know it was a while ago, because she won the Peace Prize for basically trying to fix the civil-military relations because the military just exerted so much control. But recently, she's come under a lot of fire after receiving the Nobel Peace Prize for, according to her critics internationally, for allowing the military to enact a genocide upon Rohingya Rohingyan Muslims in Myanmar. So it's a very, you know, complicated situation. There's a lot of blame to go around. Speaking of a similar situation on the home front, on the U.S. domestic front, let's talk about impeachment. So on February 13th, Trump was acquitted in his second impeachment trial. His son tweeted out after that. He tweeted out 2-0, celebrating his second acquittal. So after Trump was acquitted, Mitch McConnell, who is the currently the top Republican in the land, said that Trump was practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. So that was a direct quote. But Mitch McConnell voted to acquit because he didn't think it was constitutional to impeach a president who had already left office. So in response, Nancy Pelosi has announced a bipartisan effort to start an independent 9/11 style commission. So referring to a commission that was started post 9/11 to investigate 9/11. So an independent 9/11 style commission has been called for, which will be voted upon soon by Congress, to investigate the events of January 6th and recreate them in a more complete manner. So that is all the information we have on the insurrection and its fallout. So we are going to go to Alex for some news on the winter storm.
Yeah, so a lot's happening there, but just want to pop back for a brief second because I personally love this this comment that Trump made in response to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And Trump called him on Tuesday a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack. So those are definitely some adjectives there that are... They convey a certain message, which I think is interesting. So just throwing that back out there. But anyway, yes, we're going to talk about the weather. So it's been brutal, especially in the American South. Millions are trying to stay warm. It's even affecting vaccine providers, and they're worried about shipping vaccines across the country, which, of course, because of the pandemic, that's already, you know, compounding another problem there. But as of Wednesday, about 105 million Americans throughout the country, and not just the South, remain under winter storm warning. Storms are still coming later this week, and it's been pretty bad. Parts of Texas, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and Tennessee, they've all been affected. There's been at least 30 killed as of Wednesday across the country. The Texas Agriculture Commissioner said that they have a huge food supply chain problem in Texas now because not only are farmers don't have power, so they can't, you know, get livestock moved around and produce shipped, but their grocery stores are running dry, gas is running out of, you know, in gas stations. So it's a real, real big problem across Texas. And because I'm an environmental science major, I wanna plug this for a little bit. So there has been some news circulating around that it was because of the power plants, or it was because of the windmills. They froze because of the storms. The wind turbines froze. There wasn't any power. So people are harping on the fact that, you know, fossil fuels are the way to go. However, a government agency within the state of Texas, ERCOT, they handle the electrical grid, that sort of thing. They have publicly said that no, it's not frozen wind turbines, although that's part of the problem. In terms of electrical output, double the problem stems from thermal sources, which create double the electrical, I guess, energy output that is lost. So that's natural gas, that's coal, that's oil. and also power lines. So it really isn't turbines. It's fossil fuel sources that are keeping Texans cold across the country right now, which is a shame. But I'm going to throw in one more mini story within this story just to kind of brighten the mood. So there were thousands of sea turtles had to be rescued because they were stunned by the cold. It was so cold in like South Padre Island, Texas. So this rescue group was asking for help. And so they were able to rescue around 3,500 sea turtles, and SpaceX, Elon Musk stepping up again, SpaceX provided a commercial generator that was able to bring power to the facility where they were securing and warming these turtles. So, you know, props to Elon Musk. You know, he's doing something else. But anyway,
he's always around when you least expect him. You know, what was
exactly.
that?
Exactly. What was the, always able to provide help.
The Thailand cave? Was that where the
was
stuck? You know, when you really do not expect him to show up, he'll be there.
He pops up.
Now we're going to move on to Haiti. Recent constitutional unrest in Haiti. So recently there's been a dispute in Haiti stemming from Jovenel Moïse refusing to step down. So the root of the dispute is his opposition believes that his presidential term is up, while he, on the other hand, believes that it is not up and he actually has one more year. So the reason that this is an issue is because when he was elected, there was a constitutional, you know, dispute over the election, which actually took over a year where he actually wasn't in power for that particular year. So he only actually started his term in February of 2017 rather than in February of 2016. So this is basically a constitutional dispute between Jovenel Moïse and his supporters and then the opposition over, you know, when his term actually ended. So on February 7th, on the day that his term should have actually ended, he claims that he foiled an attempted coup, which led to the arrest of over a dozen opposition leaders. So since then, there's been a great amount of unrest in the streets of Haiti. And the opposition leaders have actually turned their support to the head of the Supreme Court in Haiti, who is Joseph McKinney Jean-Louis. I apologize for butchering that. But they have turned their support to him. So now some are claiming that there are two presidents of Haiti, or two leaders of Haiti. So the opposition claims that Moïse's government is chronically corrupt and incompetent, and they also blame him for moving the legislative events from October 2019 legislative elections. I apologize, from October 2019 to October 2021. So he's moved them, and they're blaming that for him. They're blaming him for that and claiming that he's very corrupt. So Moïse's made a promise to start a constitutional referendum to reform what he claims is a very outdated constitution. He wants to do that before he's out of office, but his opposition leaders claim that he's doing that in order to take out or remake the clause in the constitution that restricts presidential terms to just two presidential terms. So the U.S. has actually leaned support to Mr. Moïse. The State Department has claimed that this will, you know, lead to less unrest in the country and bring about more stability, but this has actually garnered a lot of criticism from Haitians and international groups. Alex, over to Alex for the new African head of the World Trade Organization.
All right, yes. So we now have a new head of the World Trade Organization, and just to kind of give a little bit of a background, the World Trade Organization is this huge intergovernmental body. It kind of helps with the regulation of international trade agreements, that sort of thing. And so we have a new leader for the WTO. I'm going to butcher her name, but it's Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. And so she is the former Nigerian Minister of Finance. And so she was in the running previously back during the Trump administration, but they effectively vetoed her because the U.S. has big sway in the WTO. But with the new Biden administration coming to power in the U.S., they threw their support behind her, and so she just took control as the Director General of the organization. She's already come out swinging She's warning people against vaccine nationalism and making sure that countries across the world have free access to vaccines, which I think is a fantastic way to start, because people should be worried right now, especially because of the COVID, the pandemic, and then also just general political sentiments. Protectionism is on the rise. People want to close borders instead of open borders, and the World Trade Organization can do a lot to kind of combat this and make sure there's the free flow of trade, of ideas, and that's going to come in handy, especially with vaccines going forward.
Definitely. So finally, we're going to talk about a recent India-China disengagement agreement that they've come to after over 9 months of contention over the border. So on February 10th, according to the BBC, the Chinese defense minister officially announced that that China had come to a disengagement agreement with India. So to give some context, there was about a 3,500-kilometer border between India and China with multiple areas of border dispute. So the border is basically divided into three sections, the west, the middle, and the east. So the west includes border disputes that actually have to do with Pakistan and Kashmir. So there is actually an area which has joint claims from that's in Kashmir that has joint claims from Pakistan, India, and China. So obviously that has led to some contention over the years. The middle of the border is actually pretty firmly set between the two. And then the east includes areas such as Sikkim, which are also areas of dispute. So this dispute goes back all the way to British colonial times when the British used Tibet as a buffer state between India and China. And after decolonization and the Communist Party came to power in China, and following that, the invasion of Tibet, this has been an issue which led to a war, to the general war in 1962, and has led to intermittent periods of conflict and skirmishes, mostly with sticks and fists and stones between the two. So it has actually been pretty quiet on this front for the 21st century until June 16th in 2020. When in the Galwan Valley in the western part of the border, there was a skirmish which led to more than 20 Indian soldiers being killed and an undisclosed number of Chinese soldiers being killed, but at least one officer. So ever since then, there has been massive troop buildup on the border, and no agreement until now to solve that. Actually, recently in January, I think January 21st, there was another skirmish which resulted in no deaths in Sikkim. So the immediate cause of this was the fact that Modi revoked Kashmir's special status in late 2019. I believe it was August 2019, which basically took away the special status that was inherent in the Indian Constitution for Kashmir. And basically the core of that was to ensure stability in Kashmir. So China didn't like that because, of course, part of what they believe is their territories in Kashmir. So that on top of troop movements from both China and India on the border led to this skirmish and then this period of great contention over the past 9 months. But thankfully, they've begun a disengagement process, which I think we can all be thankful for. So that does it for our short blurb section. We are going to be back in a minute, but first, here is a musical interlude, as recommended by our good friend Robert.
Tú tienes la bemba colorada.
Hello, everybody. Hello, all of our loyal Midwave listeners. Right now, it is Thursday, February 18th at about 3:20 p.m. And Alex and I just wanted to say hello. Just wanted the live versions of ourselves to come in and say something. Basically, what I wanted to interrupt for is to clarify something that I said in the last section. So in the China-India border dispute section. So basically, to give a little bit more context on the I apologize for that notification. to give a little bit more context on the revocation of the special rights and statuses in the Indian Constitution for Jammu and Kashmir, it was Article 370 of the Constitution, which Modi revoked on August 5th, 2019. And so that was particularly contentious because, like I mentioned, China actually has some of the some of what it claims to be its own territory in Kashmir, and it's a particularly sensitive issue for them. And they actually assisted. They actually assisted Pakistan levying an official complaint in the United Nations against India for this, what they saw as an affront on their territorial integrity. What they both saw as an affront to their territorial integrity. And then, so that is just a clarifying point on that. And secondarily, I wanted to say that the former president of Myanmar, Aung San Suu Kyi, she won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1991. And more recently, you know, in the 21st century, there have been many people who have been calling for it to be revoked because of the aforementioned genocide of the Rohingya Muslims.
And we have some breaking news, so we're going to give you some truly breaking content right here. So NASA's most advanced rover yet, Perseverance, just successfully landed on Mars after a seven-month, 292.5 million-mile journey from Earth. Its job is to explore this, this crater and search for signs of ancient life. So I guess we'll see if it finds any aliens up there, but this is exciting stuff. Because I feel like we haven't had a rover up there in a very long time. So go NASA. Woo!
That's awesome. All right, well, without further ado, we're going to get back to our main and pre-recorded programming. Welcome back, everybody. So now we're going to begin our longer, more substantive subject where we kind of go deeper and more in depth to a particular issue. So when we were thinking about what we wanted to do for this week, for this longer section, we were looking at the current events of the day. And I saw something which I actually had not heard very much about. I knew that there was a war in Ethiopia, but I didn't know the scale to which it was occurring. So, of course, what I'm referring to is the Tigray War in Ethiopia. So currently, this is by far the deadliest armed conflict in the world in 2021. So there's been 14,000 deaths already in 2021, just conflict-related deaths, so not necessarily related to civilians, compared to 2,600 in Afghanistan, and just under 1,100 in Yemen. So you know, currently the most dangerous armed conflict going on. And I really, just because obviously, you know, it's understandable to everything going on in the country and in the world that's been, you know, there's just so much to think about. But I really think not very many people know about this. And I think it'd be important to let our viewers know that this is going on.
Totally agree, Thomas, and I'm glad that we chose this for this week because this is definitely not something you see very often now, especially in a place like Ethiopia. So let's kind of dive right in. So the province we're talking about, Tigray, it's the northernmost region in Ethiopia, and it's one of the it's the fifth most populous. So there's a fair amount of people there. And this really kind of got started because of political differences and kind of an issue of federalism between the Ethiopian government and the government of the Tigray region. So before we kind of get into that, let's bring it back a little bit, get some more context to the region. So let's start off by... Thomas, you take it from here. We're going to start off by telling you a little bit about what's kind of going on in that area between, which is the region is bordered by Eritrea and Ethiopia.
So in 1998, there was a border conflict between Eritrea and Ethiopia. So that started in 1998. It was over a small disagreement in the border, specifically around the town of Badme. So there was no apparent value strategically or economically between the two, between the two for the particular area. But they fought nonetheless in a conflict that lasted in earnest until 2000, but was a conflict that still technically was never ended by a peace agreement until 2018. So before they reached an agreement in 2018, Abiy Ahmed came to power as the prime minister. And he is the one that actually negotiated the peace with Eritrea in 2018. So this garnered him a lot of international fame, and he actually won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2019 for negotiating this peace with Eritrea. So he also did some things which ended up leading to the Tigray War. So that is basically, before 2018, there was the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, or the EPRDF. So this was an ethnic federalist political coalition. So to go to break that down a little bit, ethnic basically was acknowledging the fact that the constituent parts, there were four parts of it, were divided largely on ethnic grounds. And the federalist part means that this was a group of different regions, you know, political parties that represented regions coming together. And federalist, for you know, people who might not know, federalism is basically a power-sharing relationship between the federal government and local or regional governments. So that is, so basically power is delegated down from the national to the local level. So there is some amount of authority that local governments have, as opposed to a unitary system of government where it's effectively just the national government running everything. So the EPRDF came to power after it overthrew the Communist Party in Ethiopia. I believe it was in the 1980s. And so it was made up of four different parties, including the Tigray People's Liberation Front. So this is just the political coalition which represented Tigray. So it was dissolved in 2019 by the prime minister who came to power, Abiy Ahmed. And he formed a new party, the Prosperity Party, which included the other three parts of the coalition. So the Tigray People's Liberation Front refused to really acknowledge or join the new Prosperity Party. So that actually leads us in. So that was the kind of core background, and that leads us in to the political issues that started to occur this past year in 2020.
Yeah. So basically, with the EPRDF dissolved and the new Prosperity Party in power, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, like Thomas said, they weren't having it. And so when Ahmed, the president of Ethiopia, rescheduled elections, and also this was kind of postponed because of COVID, the TPLF basically refused to join this new party. And they went ahead, and kind of this is kind of where we get the federalism confrontation here. They went ahead and scheduled regional elections in the province, and this was in defiance of the federal government. This is back in September 2020. The federal government in Ethiopia declared the election illegal, and they didn't allow journalists to go in and cover this regional election. And this, I guess, quickly escalated to attacks on the November 4th of 2020, in which the Ethiopian National Defense Force Northern Command was attacked. Five bases were attacked across the Tigray region by members of the TPLF, so Tigray People's Liberation Force. And this kind of kickstarted the conflict, and we're gonna hand it back to Thomas here.
Yeah, something to note, Alex, was in the period after the Tigray had their regional elections in defiance of the national government, and the period between that and the start of the conflict, the national government actually, so the Prosperity Party effectively, voted to withhold federal funds from Tigray. So that was actually kind of the direct impetus for the attacks from the Tigray People's Liberation Front on November 4th, which actually has now kickstarted the conflict as it is escalating. So in terms of the actual trajectory of the war, the national government has actually seen support from Eritrea, who they're actually, you know, until very recently in a conflict with. And also there are reports that they are receiving aid from Somalian soldiers as well, which is very interesting. And they pretty quickly managed to regain their control over, you know, these key areas in Tigray. So effectively the areas that were attacked, as well as the capital. But that was back in 2020, and yet the conflict continues today. So obviously, the Tigray People's Liberation Front is continuing the fight from other areas in the northeast of Ethiopia.
Yeah. So this has been continuing, and so starting in November and December of 2020 into the new year, there are reports of a lot of extrajudicial killings taking place of civilians across Tigray province, and this has been quite concerning. The UN is basically throwing a flag on the field and saying this is, you know, not cool. We need more information about what's going on here. And the Ethiopian government is basically blanket denied a lot of the accusations of what's been kind of going on and coming out of Tigray province. And so this is, you know, their statements are contrasted by aid agencies saying that about 4.5 million people are in need in Tigray province. It's about 60% of the population of that area. The Ethiopian government is claiming that only about half those people are in need and that it can reach all of them. And so NGOs don't need to, I guess, go into the region and do anything. So it's quite heartbreaking, really. It seems like there's a lot of people in need going on. And there's about 20,000 people are currently missing. There have been a site that have been at least half a dozen sites massacres by the Ethiopian National Defense Forces among civilians, and even the Ethiopian Minister of Women has gone on the record saying that there has been sexual violence and assaults being committed by Ethiopian forces against civilians in that region.
Yeah, it truly is a heartbreaking situation and a harrowing thing to read about, and, you know, remind everybody that, you know, it's basically a blackout in the region right now. I think as of today, it you know, Ethiopia actually did they cut power? Did they cut?
Yeah, they cut power to the region.
Power to the region just today. So it really is very difficult, you know, to corroborate or to verify anything going on, and it just is a scene of great disorder. So hoping that this gets resolved quickly. In terms of refugees, there's been a large, you know, influx of refugees from Ethiopia into Sudan since November, and that number is just increasing as the conflict escalates.
Yeah, and I think just something to circle back to is the fact that 2 years ago now, the leaders of Eritrea and Ethiopia, the same leaders that are in power today, got Nobel Peace Prizes for ending long-standing conflict between those two countries, and here we are just 2 years later, and they're back at it again, except this time they're in cahoots, and they're fighting this this rebel province, and we're seeing a lot of what has been called by a lot of officials in the UN war crimes and crimes against humanity that are, you know, not something that you want to see from people who have won a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, jumping off of that, you know, that's a criticism that is often levied at the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, we mentioned in the first segment, we mentioned Suu Kyi. She won a Nobel Peace Prize and then went on to, you know, effectively allow for a genocide and ethnic cleansing of Rohingya Muslims in her country, of Rohingya Muslims in her country. And then also a similar criticism has been levied against the Nobel Peace Prize for Obama's Nobel Peace Prize, which I believe was in 2009, 2008, one of the two. I believe it was 2009. And that was before he started, you know, conducting drone strikes at a rate, I believe it was 8 times higher than Bush. So that's a problem. This is tangential to the issue at hand, but I think very interesting that there are these kind of immediate successes that the Nobel Peace Prize seems to, you know, support and give out these awards for, only to be followed by what critics call genocide and ethnic cleansing and atrocities. Just something interesting to think about.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. I think that this is definitely not something that's going to be resolved anytime soon, especially because the Ethiopian government has technically said that they've won already, and this is back in 2020, that they took over the ground and the bases and the cities that were lost, and now it's basically they're fighting a low-level conflict and insurgency campaign against the people in the province and, I guess, members of the political party. That refused to sign on to the prosperity party that the president of Ethiopia put together. So I don't know if we're going to see an end in sight anytime soon, and it'll be interesting to see what some international reactions are going to be from the UN, whether peacekeeping forces are deployed, and then also from other actors in the region, so the African Union, and then also other countries around the world, especially the U.S. with the new Biden administration. So I just will have to see what comes from all of that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, something that I don't think we emphasized enough before about Tigray was the first of all, currently, in terms of comparing the amount of troops that are in the Tigray People's Liberation Front's control versus Ethiopia's control, for this conflict, Tigray actually has more troops than in their armed services right now in the conflict than Ethiopia does. But again, Ethiopia is getting support from Eritrea and potentially Somalia. And something else is that, according to our sources, before 2019, so before the Prosperity Party was formed, and while the EPRDF was still a coalition that existed, the Tigray People's Liberation Front had kind of an undue amount of influence in national politics during this particular time. So really, they kind of view it as Abiy Ahmed coming to power in 2018 and starting to whittle down their control. So that is really why they've, you know, decided to resist the national government so much. But yeah, very, very, you know, heart-wrenching situation, and we're hoping for a relatively quick political resolution. So that is the end of our long section. We're going to take another little break. We'll see you back in a minute.
All right, we are back, and now to the lighter section. So last time, if there are any repeat viewers, we had Thomas quiz me a little bit, embarrass me maybe, you might even say, with my lack of knowledge in certain areas. Everybody has gaps, but today we're going to figure out where Thomas's gaps lie. So we're going to throw in some like pop culture, we're going to throw in some news, and we're going to throw in some Thomas-specific things that our friends we'll be able to pick up on. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to see.
Oh, no.
we're going to start off first. So Aunt Jemima, you know, the syrup brand, sure. They are getting rebranded because of connotations with the previous, I guess, the brand and the imaging. So what are they called now? So the new product, the syrup product, I have not actually gone out and bought any syrup recently, so I don't know if it's actually on shelves yet, but here are our options. So A, Family Best, B, Pearl Milling Company, C, Heritage Mills, and D, The Great Pancake Company. So any thoughts, Thomas?
So I've definitely heard this story at one point or another in the past week, but I can't really remember what they changed their name to.
Oh.
I'm sorry if this offends any of our viewers, but I didn't really have very much of it before, so I guess I didn't pay enough attention to the story. But I'm
not a big syrup guy.
Not a big syrup guy, no.
Oh.
I'm going to go with B. Is it the Pearl Miller? Was it that one?
Pearl Milling Company. You are correct.
Yes.
So that's what they changed it to. Apparently it's a throwback to just some historical branding and kind of companies that were involved in the production process. But yes, Aunt Jemima is now changed to Pearl Milling Company. The image is gone, and so is the name. And I guess in that vein, they're also changing Uncle Ben and the rice brand. And I think there's one other one in the news that I can't quite remember, but it's also getting rebranded. But anyway, yeah. So now we're changing gears a little bit, throwing it international, even perhaps into Thomas's wheelhouse. We'll see. So in an apparent tit-for-tat move, China is banning which global news organization from operating in the country? Is it A, BBC World Service, B, the Associated Press, C, Sky News, or D, Al Jazeera?
Huh.
This is recent.
Very recent. So it's a tit-for-tat. So obviously, you know, the news service did something to offend China, perhaps. Can I ask what the tit in that tit-for-tat was?
So I believe that this country in which they're operating also, like, I don't know if it was banned or there was some kind of kerfuffle with the Chinese news service.
I see. Well, you know, that's you know, using that hint, I am going to select D, or Al Jazeera.
And this is where Thomas is incorrect. It is BBC World Service. So I did some quick Googling. So this comes after China's National Radio and Television Administration That's totally wrong. We're just going to keep on moving. But basically, yes, Thomas is incorrect.
That's
so it's one for one. Moving right along. So this is going to be maybe a stumper, because I haven't even heard about this until I did research. So over 100 people are missing and dozens are dead after an avalanche tore through a dam in northern India. What caused the avalanche? Is it A, an oil pipeline collapse, B, a stampede of wild elk, 3, explosive demolitions gone awry, or did I just say D? That was C. D, a piece of a glacier breaking off.
Gosh, I don't know. It's very irritating to me, Alex, that you seem to be putting more effort into making me look stupid than you have into any of your classes. I'm gonna go with the climate change related answer and go D.
Ooh, okay, good choice. Yes, so at least 140 people are missing after this was last week a dam, a piece of glacier just broke off. People already knew that it was kind of precarious given climate change, all of that. It was eroding. It broke off, hit a dam, and caused massive damage in a province in northern India. Yeah. So now we're getting to kind of lighthearted part of the lighthearted section. We're going to see Thomas knows what's going on. So to start off, what color were the first oranges? Okay, we've got A, orange, B, violet, C, green, or D, brown. So what color were the first oranges?
So is this first domesticated oranges or just oranges in the wild? You know,
oranges in the wild.
So
the ancestor of the current orange that you see in the supermarket.
I'm gonna go brown. I'm guessing brown. Final answer.
He's guessing brown. Final answer. That is incorrect. Oh. It is actually green. They were an orange pomelo hybrid, and they were green. Oddly enough, I learned that today. But this is, you know, where we're made from to Thomas. So honestly, Thomas, you really should have known that.
I really should have known that.
Knowledge is slack. And how have you not learned this in your poli sci and geography classes? Anyway, actually, this next question is really going to hit on geography. I think our viewers are really going to like this.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
So this question is, what is the capital of Moldova? All right, we're giving a lot of, we got a lot of options here. So I'm just going to list cities, and you tell me stop when I get to it. All right, so we got, and I'm going to mispronounce a lot of these. Ljubljana, Minsk, Podgorica, Chisinau, Skopje, Zagreb, Vilnius, Vaduz, Riga, and Bratislava. Now, those are all capitals of European countries.
Oh no. The thing is, I've heard of Minsk, so I was going to say Minsk, but then you said it's a capital. That's a capital of a different country. Well, I really don't appreciate the emotional assault that's going on here that I won't explain, but I'll go... I will randomly guess... I guess the only one I remember is... What's
that? I can go through them again. You said Minsk.
I'll go for Minsk. I'll lock in Minsk because that's the only one.
Lock in Minsk?
I'll lock in Minsk.
Okay. Well, I'm sure the viewers at home know Minsk is the capital of Belarus.
Oh.
And the actual capital of Moldova, unless you want another shot at this.
No, please.
Redemption round?
No,
the capital of Moldova is Chisinau, which I'm going to butcher. So I'm going to have somebody actually pronounce it, which hopefully I can play if you give me a second. Nope, I can't actually because I got headphones on. It's Chisinau is how you pronounce it. That's the capital of Moldova, smack dab right there, right next to Russia. But there you have it, folks. That is the embarrassed Thomas quiz. Payback retribution round.
Well, I think I got 2 out of 5. Right, that's not bad.
It was hard. It was obscure.
It was a difficult one. All right. Well, that is our show. We are now going to take the remainder of our time and play some funky music. So we're really excited about that. Please stick around until we get to the very end, and we'll do a little conclusion. But thank you so much for listening to the substantive part of our show. Hello, everybody. Wasn't that fun? Right now, it is currently 3:49 p.m., Thursday, February 18th. And we got some more revisions and corrections, but thankfully they're all on Alex's side this time. So, Alex, you want to talk about the real – if someone needs to know where Moldova is, I think you do.
Well, you know, I misspoke a little bit there. I said, you know, right there next to Russia or something like that. And there's a little bit of distance.
There's a little bit of distance.
Russia. It's actually a whole Ukraine away. But there is – a kind of disputed region in Moldova that technically Russia has, like, you know, soldiers in. So I, depending on the context, I may not have totally made a huge gaffe there. But I just, for our viewers, I wanted to put out a correction. But of course, Thomas still got the question wrong.
Well, speaking of Alex's gaffes, there was another one that was actually pointed out by one of our viewers. So shout out to Isaac for being so attentive. It turns out that NASA actually has sent another rover. It was to Mars, and they sent it in 2011, landed in 2012. NASA's, I believe, it's a Curiosity rover. So it was more recent than you think, than Alex thinks, at least. There's been another rover. So thank you to the viewers for pointing that out, and make sure to point out our mistakes in the future. I think it was a pretty successful show. Some technical difficulties. It seems like no one really ever messages me until the least opportune time possible, if you heard all those messenger notifications. I apologize for that, but we'll work on that in the future. I think it went pretty well. Looking forward to next week.
Yeah.
Well,
I want to thank our viewers also, Robert, for putting out, giving us a solid recommendation. Hopefully he's still listening. Susie, Isaac, clearly he's trying to find faults in our programming. We appreciate that. We want to stay true for our viewers and anyone else out there listening. Feel free to send us a message. We can, you know, put in a song. We could even call in. You can call in and we can have a little chat, feature we might utilize going forward. So in the words of Thomas, it could be big.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's for viewers like you that we do this. So thank you. Well, we are going to go to some music for a few minutes, come back for a concluding message, and then we'll go to the show at 4. So see you in a minute. Well, hello everybody. Welcome back. It is just about 3:59 today, Thursday, February 18th, and we're about to log off.
Yeah, we just want to introduce you all to the next person on Midwave Radio. It is Charlie Ewell. Hope I'm pronouncing his name right. And his show is called A Method Main. So I believe it's international music. So stay tuned if you want to listen to that. But we appreciate everyone. We had a whole 9 viewers, although one of them was me, listeners at the match, which is exciting. So stay tuned with us next time, this week, same time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. See you guys next week. All right. Bye-bye.